Good. So I'd like to thank very much the organisers for including me in this programme. It's a great pleasure to be at the Fields as ever, and I'm looking forward to an even bigger event, you know, 1 month from now, when we'll all be coming again. When we all proposed our talks for the programme, I found myself proposing the same talk as Jan Obwe, which did make its way onto the programme for some little while. And then we flipped a coin and he won, so he gets to give a talk. And I, that means I have to give another talk. What? Well, there was a reason for it. There's a Machiavellian reason for it, but I won't go into it. It is. Yeah. It's on? Okay. It's on. Believe it now? Okay, good. Alright, so what I'm going to talk about is a little rough and ready, but it's something that I've been thinking about over the last really few weeks. And so this is kind of, you know, pre-version one of this thing, and if people have nice suggestions, I'll be delighted to hear about it. But it's just something that's been kind of bugging me for a while, and I wanted to see if I could make some sense out of it. So this is concerns the modelling SDEs with jump, jump diffusion SDEs, of which, you know, many people in this room have been using a lot. And okay, so here's the right. It doesn't do anything now. That's Well, okay, it's back on screen. Okay, so I want to say something about the usual setup for, just refresh your memories in a little bit more detail than sometimes we do, about the basic setup for jump diffusion SDEs as formulated in, you know, the standard textbooks. And the question really is whether you should include in the model solution-dependent compensators for the jump terms that appear in the SDE. And generally, the formulation does not include that in the way it's done in the standard way. And so I wanted to find out why not, when it seems that, you know, standard things like compound Poisson processes, for example, you know, clearly have, you know, state-dependent compensators. And so why are they excluded in the usual formulation of SDEs? So I asked lots of people this question, and nobody gave me a straight answer. And then I found the answer in Gitman and Skorohod's 1972 book. So I'm going to tell you what their answer was. And then we say, well, is that an adequate answer, or should we think again? So that's sort of what I want to say. This is the first few topics here. And then I want to say just a little bit about, I mean, if we want to solve SDEs, there are two ways we can go about it. We can look at strong solutions where we take, you know, a given driving term and feed it into an equation and do a Picard iteration or something like that and come up with the answer. Or we can go for weak solutions where we solve some different equation and then transform the measure to get what we want. So the question is, can we, you know, is that a better way to go? Okay. So I want to say a little bit about that. And for that part of the talk, I'm going to actually talk mainly about piecewise deterministic processes. So that's to say, jump SDEs with no diffusion term. And to be perfectly candid with you, the main reason for doing that is because I'd already kind of discussed it somewhere, and I was ready to go. You know? Whereas to try and sort of do the first part of the talk strictly in a consistent manner was sort of not feasible in the time, I'm afraid. So, but I want to tell you what the story is there, and then I think I hope I can convey kind of the message I want to convey that way. All right, here we go again. I give up. Right. So remember what the usual formulation for jump SDEs is, and that's in terms of Poisson random measures. So this is, in a way, a surprisingly simple little subject. I mean, you start out with, you know, just some measurable space, and you want to define what you mean by a point process, you know, a y-valued point process. And so this is defining a random variable which takes values in a set of integer-valued measures on this space yy, and then you just define the obvious probabilistic setup. Okay. So you say that a random variable, you know, measure that integer-valued random measure is the Poisson random measure with Levy measure. I could call it, I don't think that's standard terminology, but the Levy measure mu. If you, if for any set in your space, this random variable mu of b has a Poisson distribution with parameter equal to mu of b. So it's the average number of points in that set is the measure of the set, this measure of the set, like this, okay? And the for disjoint sets, these random variables are independent. So that's what a random measure is, a Poisson random measure on a specific space, on just on a general measurable space. And it's very easy to construct this thing. So all you have to do is just take, you know, so if we take, generally the Levy measure doesn't have finite total mass, so you just take a sequence of sets, disjoint sets of finite mass, whose union is the whole space, and you simply kind of for each of these sets, bn, you just select a number of points according to the Poisson distribution, and then having done that, you just select where these points are going to go by just randomly selecting points with the distribution, the normalized distribution of the Levy measure in that piece. Okay, and if you do that, then that gives you that's construction which satisfies all the properties you want. So it's a very kind of straightforward thing to do. So what we see in SDEs are so-called Poisson point processes with some underlying measurable space Z and a Levy measure mu. And so this is simply a Poisson random measure as defined above, but on the product space of R plus cross Z. So the Y space up here is R plus cross Z down there. And we simply have the measure involved on that product space is just the product measure of Lebesgue measure on the time axis times the given Levy measure on the space axis. Okay. So in that case, as you're perfectly well aware of, the process, you know, the real value process, t goes to t of n and a, is just a Poisson process of rate a, and the Poisson martingale is just given by the obvious compensator. Okay. So that's what's used as the driving term for SDEs, and the reason for that is how it got into the picture, I think, is because of the famous Levy-Itô decomposition of independent increment processes. So if we look at this, so here's the picture. We have some measurable space here, and we just take a rectangle like this, and then we simply place Poisson points on this rectangle. So the number of points is just equal to the area, the new measure cross dt. And the points are just placed randomly in the way that I described earlier. So then the conventional formulation of jump diffusion SDEs then is this one. So where we take a drift term, a Brownian motion or a diffusion-like term, and then this kind of jump term. And I think I kind of like this general idea, which is the way it's presented in, say, the Ikeda and Watanabe book, where we take some sort of abstract space as many treatments of this will simply be, basically the same space as X lives in. But I think there's a lot to be said for taking something a little bit more general from that, because it enables you, see, so this basically says that we generate points in an auxiliary space, Z, and then this function gamma maps those points into real jumps. And this, and I think there's working in things related to asset management, with which I have been working on with my colleague Sebastian Leo, we found that when you have a list of, so this in a multi-dimensional setting, it's very convenient to have some setup like this where you have a lot of flexibility over, whether two components can jump at the same time, whether they always jump at the same time, whether the jumps are independent. You can model all kinds of things. If you allow yourself this degree of flexibility. So I'm a big fan of, moving to a slightly more general setup than people generally do. So in order to do this, you have to have, so here Z0 is just a set in this auxiliary measurable space whose complement has a finite measure under the Levy measure nu. So to make sense out of this, the integrability term, which relates to these components here, is simply this, that you have to be able to integrate gamma squared against d nu over the small jump set, so over this arbitrarily chosen Z0 set. Okay. All right, and then if you have the usual Lipschitz condition, you know, and here the Lipschitz condition applies, you know, the two, this, and so you've got two jump terms. You've got the small jump bit and the large jump bit. So the condition applies to the small jump bit, which is the square integrability condition. Okay, so we have a Lipschitz condition in that sense, and then you have a unique strong solution to that SDE. And the way you get it is this, is essentially it's an iterative process where you separate out the big jumps. So if we look at the jumps that occur in this set of finite measure, then they occur at isolated times, and so we can just order those times and call these points, say, tor j, pj. And then we just do conventional iteration, Pitot iteration, so that involves, you know, the small jumps plus the diffusion part, on up to the first jump time, the first big jump time, if you like, tor 1, and then we just insert the jump at the appropriate point, rather like Raman was doing this morning, and then we just restart from x tor 1. So that then that defines the solution, defined for all time, and that's the way it works. Okay, so the question that is sort of bugging me here is this, that we have this equation where we have these two noises, you know, we've got W noise and we've got the Poisson random measure noise. But this thing, you know, the compensator of this guy is just it just comes right from this picture here, is that. Okay? So apparently we have, you know, a driving term here where there's no dependence of the compensator for this jump measure on the solution, you know, which you might think would be a kind of natural thing to want. And so the question is that sufficiently general, or have we, you know, should we be considering something else? So this is the question we're trying to answer. And the clearest answer I got anywhere was actually in Gitlin and Skorohod's 72 book, where they devote, you know, a page and a half to this, and it's a little bit. Well, so I want to tell you what they say, and then you can see for yourself. Okay. So this is the argument more or less as they present it, so don't blame me, you know. So we take a small at the time, so we take a little time interval t to t plus h, all right? And then we suppose that we have our solution up to time t, and we have arrived at the point xt, and then you can think of solving this equation by some Euler scheme, okay? So we take another time step h, and the Brownian, the increment for the Brownian term will just be the, you know, the diffusion coefficient times the increment of the Brownian motion, and that's just a random variable whose distribution is normal with variance equal to sigma squared times h. Okay. So correspondingly, if we look at the Poisson-Martingale increments, you know, we get something like this. So we sort of freeze the components here and just move along for a short time. So now you want to think of this as a conditional statement given the value of the process at time, you know, given xt is equal to little x, okay? So that freezes the coefficients here, and we can just, and then this is like a little integral over the Poisson measure. And so let's just approximate it. Let's choose a bunch of piecewise constant functions which approximate the function gamma in the obvious way, so I've left out these arguments now suppressed for a little while. Okay, so this gamma n, it takes some constant values on sets A and K, and we choose it in such a way that this approximation happens, and so we can get the integral by just integrating these guys and then taking the limit, right? So if we look at the characteristic function of so if we look at our, you know, discrete approximation to the integral and look at the distribution of that, then we can compute the characteristic function, which is just writing down this equation here. So we have a bunch of independent random variables, so we can just split it up like this, and so what we have here is just this is just a Poisson random variable with the expectation taken off. So if we look at the characteristic function for that, it's just this expression here. And then we bundle it all up again and we get something like this. Okay. So when we take the limit, we're going to get the characteristic function for our the integral we're concerned with in the first place, and it's this. Okay, so we have a characteristic function here expressed in terms of, you know, a function now where the parametric dependence on the solution is buried in this gamma function here, but not in here. Okay, so mu dz is just one fixed Levy measure. Okay, so that's what it is. So if we want to change that around, what we should do is just change the variable. Okay, so we just change variables to zeta is equal to gamma of tx z, and then we just stick these things in here, and then of course this measure. So the integrand just loses its tx dependence, so we just get a sort of standard parameter here. But on the other hand, we get the image measure here, nu composed of gamma t inverse, d psi. So that this gives us a situation here. Okay. So if we now put in these parameters back in the parameters expressed in the usual way, then we see that what we've got here is now, you know, something where the parametric dependence has sort of shifted from the integrand here to the integrator, to this this measure. And so we've actually succeeded here in representing a system where the measure here is actually state-dependent, you know, the compensator of this thing is state-dependent. Right? So that's the argument. So the argument of Gichman and Scholarhold is that, you know, if we start with something which has an independent jump measure, we can replace it by something that has a state-dependent jump measure by simply changing the coordinates. Okay. So you might say, well, I don't want to do that. I want to start here and go the other way around. You know, so in a sort of a modeling problem, you want to start with the parametric dependence of the Levy measure and then say, well, can I now represent it in you know, the standard form as I represented it before? And so the argument there is that, you know, if we restrict ourselves to a Euclidean space setting where our auxiliary space, so this is an SDE in RD, and our auxiliary space is RD, okay, then there's always, we can always find a gamma and a lambda such as this will, so if we, you know, start with a some time and space dependent Levy compensator, we can always represent that as the image measure of the Begg measure under some map from RD to RD. Okay? So we can always represent any distribution as just the image measure of the Begg measure under some transformation. So that's in the Euclidean setting. Now, I mean, I don't know to what extent you could do this with other measurable spaces. So in my case, you know, we wanted something a bit more general than Euclidean space, but I don't know anything about sort of theorems like that in a more general context. But in any case, in this context, we have a result. So that's the answer. It's, you know, of course, this is a bit of a rough and ready argument, to say the least. And one of the things rough and ready about it is you have to discuss the dependence on Tx. So you have, you know, a measurable selection problem to solve if you want to actually do this and make sure that you've got a measurable function of all the three arguments. So, you know, it needs a little cleaning up, but you can see what the basic idea is here. Okay, so if we just look at some examples, the key point about this to me is that your standard measure turns out to be the Lebesgue measure. So it's, you know, not a finite measure, it's the Lebesgue measure, okay? So every realization like this is an infinite activity process, if you like, because we've created something where the fundamental Levy measure is the Lebesgue measure. Okay, so now let's look at some kind of silly examples. Right? So how does this work? You know, so let's think just for a second. Think of a non-homogeneous Poisson process. All right. So we have just an ordinary Poisson process xt with arrival rate eta of t. Okay. Right, so if you want to think of this as a Poisson random measure, then, you know, you could think of the auxiliary space as being R plus, you could think of the Levy measure as just being the delta function, you know, Dirac measure at 1, the size of the jumps. And the compensator, of course, is just this. Okay. So I had an analogy for this sort of situation, you see, because what you're doing is you're generating points at a rate which is time varying. You know, so you have a little window of time and a certain number of points pop up, and the average number of points is e to the t dt over time dt. So, and what we want to do is translate into kind of spatial dependence rather than time dependence. So, and the obvious analogy is camera. You know, you think of your camera, and you think of these points as photons. And the question is, how do you get, you know, enough light into your camera? Well, there's two different ways. You know, you can extend the exposure, or you can increase the aperture, right? So this is what's going on here. Okay. So what we can do is this. So we can just do this. So we can just transform to a situation like this one, where we take our new auxiliary space to be R plus. And we just draw our eta function along here, like this. And then we let time evolve at uniform rate instead of rate eta. And you can see, as this happens, the area we pick up is exactly this integral eta sts. And so we're simply using the kind of independent increments property of the Poisson random measure and just saying, well, you know, the average number of points is simply the area of the appropriate curve. So if we just run a process like this and just admit all the jumps, you know, just count all the jumps, we're going to get something whose distribution is identical to the one thing we started with. Okay. So this is that's what we can do. Right? We can just switch from time to space by just using that very simple argument. Well, of course, that's not so simple if you have, you know, something where you start with some non-degenerate distribution. You know, then there's a little more work. But that's basically the argument of Gitlin and Skorohod, that you can always do that. Okay, so what's the problem? So the problem, to my mind, is this, that you have, think of just models of, you know, lots of people in this room have thought about default models, and if you think of a reduced form, you know, reduced form default model is something where you think of default or some random time happening at some rate, so the conditional, you know, the incremental probability of getting a default could be sort of some represented by some hazard rate. And that hazard rate can depend on random parameters. So you think of some underlying factor dependence. You know, so xt could be some vector of factors which evolve in some random way, or that could be part of, you know, if you're interested in modeling like self-exciting point processes, this could be part of the solution of some equation like Hawke's process or something like that. Okay. But in any case, if you think of if you condition on the factor process, then you're back in this sort of deterministic world here. Okay, and let's suppose that X is, say, you know, Gaussian process, something like that, and H is some non-bounded function, like affine function. Then you're never going to get a uniform bound for H of XT. So, you know, along any sample function, you have, you know, bounded rate per, you know, on a bounded interval because it's a continuous function. But when you allow, you know, random choice of these sample functions, then you know, there's some probability you're going to get arbitrarily high rates. So with probability 1, you have a finite activity process. But if you want to represent it in a space-related way rather than a time-related way, it's an infinite activity realization, because you're going to need the whole of, you know, the real line to represent what's going on. Okay. So in a word, you know, you've conveniently realized a finite activity, very simple finite activity process, by an infinite activity process. Now, is that a good idea? Right? I'm not sure it is. Okay. All right. So that's the pitch, you see. So I think the last word hasn't really been said on this. And if we want to do it, then if we want to take a more direct approach, then, as I mentioned at the beginning of the talk, there's basically two ways to do this. We could use a Picard iteration approach. I mean, we could simply, you know, state that the compensator depends on the solution, and then we could attempt to solve the equation. You know, I hasten to say I haven't worked out the details here, but there's nothing wrong with a Picard iteration approach with this, because you're defining sort of iteration n plus 1 in terms of iteration n, and then the compensator just looks like a random compensator, a sort of predefined random compensator. It's certainly meaningful to plug that back into the equation and generate the next iteration. And then, you know, I'm fairly sure that under reasonable conditions you will get a unique strong solution that way. The other way to go is weak solutions, where we have the freedom to change the compensator by absolutely continuous change of measure. And you know, maybe, in fact, I'm sure it's true that this will allow us, greater, or to operate with fewer conditions on the parameters. So what I want to do now for the remaining 10 minutes or so is just look at this latter question. And I'm planning to do this just in terms of piecewise deterministic processes, because the formula is all very sort of clear then. But at the same time, I think you get the message. I mean, you can see in what way you can or cannot transform processes by absolutely continuous change of measures. So let's have a quick look at that. So let me just remind you what these things are. So a piecewise deterministic process, as I mentioned at the beginning, is just like a jump diffusion without the diffusion. So it's something which just has deterministic motion. It has the two out of the three components of the Levy process, but not the diffusion component. So it has deterministic motion plus jumps. So the idea is this, that these things are sort of widely used in kind of applied probability, relating to queuing systems, all kinds of applications. So you can formulate lots of things this way. But the basic idea is you start out with some state space. You have a vector field defined on that state space. So the three ingredients are a vector field, a jump rate, and a transition measure. Okay? So the description is very straightforward. A vector field defines a set of integral curves. That's these lines here. So you start at a point somewhere. You move off along the integral curve corresponding to that, which starts at that point. And then you generate jumps at rate lambda of xt, where xt is your solution. So this is the jump rate. When we're at point x, the jump rate is lambda of x. So you may get a jump. So when you do get a jump, you just transit to some possibly randomly chosen point according to some transition measure q, and then you just restart. And in lots of the examples, in lots of the applications for this, you also have to take account of boundary behavior. So it's possible these integral curves may hit the boundary of the state space. And if they do, you have to take a jump, and then you invoke another transition measure, r, which brings you back to a randomly chosen point on the inside, and you continue that way. Okay? So that's the general picture. So it's very simple. This is a very, very simple way of constructing these things, which I think I don't really need to go into. But just notation, we need to use this sort of coordinate-free notation for an ordinary differential equation. This is like the first-order operator, which corresponds to the differential equation. The vector field defines the solution of ordinary differential equation. So that's the first-order differential operator. So that's the components. Now, let me just sort of just get to the punchline here for a second, which is this. The main sort of general result here is that process that I just described is the Markov process, and its generator is this thing. So it has the sort of jump measure part, plus a deterministic part corresponding to deterministic motion, and if you have a boundary, there's a boundary condition, which is that in order to be in the domain of the generator, a function has to satisfy a boundary boundary condition. Okay. So what you see, in this case, this is always like finite activity. No question of infinite activity here. And so you can always separate out the jump term into, a rate, a jump rate, and then a transition measure. So for every x, this thing's a probability measure. Yeah. So in sort of general Levy process, you have to, combine q times lambda with one object, that's the way it appears in the Levy process. But here, you can always, it's easier to think of this thing as a transition measure. It simply selects another point at random and then jumps the curve at a rate. So that makes it quite reasonably clear. Okay, so, we're running out of time here, so let me just get to the. There's a lot of sort of stochastic calculus goes on here, most of which I'll have to come back to this a little bit. But let's have a look at changing. So I wanted to look at what happens when you change measure in a piecewise deterministic process. And so in order to do that, you have to look at this general change, the replace the usual Kirsanov exponential of diffusion theory by the Dolian exponential, which is its generalization. So this is this you will find in Philip Prosser's book, among many other places. So if you start with a semi-martingale, you can always define the, you can always look at the equation dz equals zdn, as with the Gyurcsánof exponential, and it always has a solution, which is written down here. So it relates to, you know, the quadratic variation process of the continuous part of n plus some you know, this product relating to the jumps of n, and that product always converges. And this is what the Dolignan exponential is. Now, in so for the purposes of what we're saying now, you know, we don't see this part because we have no diffusion. So that term just disappears, and we just get a product of jump terms. Okay. So if you can now look at defining, you know, so if by standard, you know, it's easy to see that the result is a super martingale, and it will be a martingale if and only if it has expectation 1, you know, on some interval 0 t. Okay, and if it does, you can then use it to change measure. And the question is, what's the Gyurcsánof theorem in this context? And what you find is it's this, that if we start with a local martingale, define its exponential, and we take another local martingale n, and then what's going to happen is that n minus some process will be a martingale under q, where q is the measure here. And the question is, what's that process? And the answer is, it's the predictable compensator of this cross variation process for m and n. So that's the generalization of the Gyurcsánof theorem. Now, of course, the real problem is, you know, when is it a martingale? Okay. And so I think this is something where, you know, I'd love to know whether anything's really been done since 1979 and 1980, when Jean Menin did some work on this. And as far as I'm aware, that's basically the last word, and not terribly satisfactory word on this. What this says is that, I mean, there is a criterion, but it's not something that's kind of very readily checkable. So what it is this, that you look at the martingale, local martingale M defining the transformation, you just split it up into small jump and big jump components. So you just separate out the big jumps of M and compensate them with the usual compensator, and then so M is M1, M2. M1 is the big jump thing, compensated big jumps, and M2 is just the difference. So that's a decomposition. And then just to get to the point here, we have the criterion is this. So if we look at this process, so it's the quadratic variation of the continuous part of M, you know, plus the sum of the big jumps plus sum of the small jumps squared, and we look at the predictable compensator of that, if that's bounded, then this is uniformly integral. So that's, you know, that's not a particularly easy thing to check. Well, I mean, it's quite a restrictive condition to start with, and it's also not particularly easy to check because you have all kinds of different sorts of jumps here. I mean, the jumps may or may not be predictable, so the compensators may or may not be continuous. You know, you've got all kinds of things to check if you want to turn this into a usable condition. It's nowhere near as good as the Novikov condition for diffusion theory. So I think this is the main stumbling block, sort of standing in the way of really, you know, using weak solutions for jump diffusion SDEs in a serious way, because you have to, you know, it simply doesn't make sense unless this, unless the measure transformation makes sense. So let me just very quickly tell you what the deal is when we apply this to piecewise deterministic processes. And in fact, the answer is kind of obvious, and you can guess it. Without any of this stuff, you can just guess what's going to happen, and it happens. You know, so let me just tell you that. So you can you know, go through the whole process, and we can write down expressions for what, you know, if we start with a martingale defined on the piecewise deterministic process, we can write down the expression for the Gyurcsánof exponential or the Dolignan exponential. And we can go through a whole lot of calculations, which I don't have time to show you, and we get this. Right, so basically, the answer is on this slide here. So if you remember, the thing has, there are three characteristics for this process. So number one is the vector field. Number two is the jump rate. And number three is the transition measure. Okay. So if you do absolutely continuous change in measure in this context, you cannot change the vector field. That, like volatility in the Giasana's case, vector field is measure invariant. Because, and it's obvious from a sort of detection theory point of view. So what does singularity of measures mean? It means I can tell which measure it is by observing the process for epsilon amount of time. So if you have a process moving along two different vector fields, you are going to know about it very soon. Okay. So for that reason, absolute continuous measure never changes the vector field. On the other hand, you can change the other ingredients in basically arbitrary way. So what this is saying is that, you know, if we start with a set of characteristics, so a jump rate lambda, a measure, two measures, transition measures Q and R, then we can change the lambda to any other lambda, you know, that's not equal to zero when this one's not equal to zero. So we can change lambda to lambda tilde, which is just multiplying it by some positive function. And we can just make any absolutely continuous change of the jump measure that we like. So our new Q is just the integral of some rather than extreme derivative times the old Q. And that's the story. So if you just think back to sort of what the program I'm trying to sort of get to, is that we can certainly, you know, by this kind of change of measure in jump diffusion, we can certainly introduce, you know, state dependence into the picture just by this one here. So if you think of a finite activity process, this is just a jump rate, and this beta can be any, you know, that's something that just comes out of the Dolean theorem. We can certainly include state dependent processes there, and therefore get, you know, a good theory. Okay. So I think, you know, the setup is right. The only thing that's really standing in the way is this. Condition for the exponential to have the exponential martingale to have expectation one. I mean that's, you know, the mechanics work, but there's something that's not quite adequate to make this a universal theory. Okay, so I think that's sort of where I'm at so far. So in a word, you know, it seems to me that there's kind of a case for doing this explicitly rather than, you know, including the state-dependent jump measures, in the end of simplicity. You know, if you don't do it, then you may well have to just model an infinite activity process, and you don't really want it. And why do that if you don't need to? You know, so that's the message. And if you buy into that message, then there's a lot to do. So that's my message for the day. Thank you. So I should thank the people I've bugged on this subject, who are the people at the bottom there, and they've been very patient. So thank you very much.